The Movements is a leftist history and politics podcast. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Movements Pod. Quick update on the history series. The Colonization of Palestine series should be restarting in the coming weeks. The script isn't quite ready, so you know what that means. It's time for another episode of Stalin for Time. Today's discussion episode will focus on the debt crisis in Puerto Rico. I'm joined by Manuel Venero to discuss the colonial relationship between the United States and the Puerto Rican government. I'd like to welcome to the show Manuel Venero. Manuel is a commie pinko leftist who I got to know involved in a commie pinko leftist organization that shall remain nameless a couple of years back. Manuel is joining us to talk about Puerto Rico, which is a topic I don't really know shit about. So let's start with more recent events, Manuel. Can you kind of give us a basic overview of what's been going on more recently with the debt crisis and the basic takeover of Puerto Rico by an unelected financial board, and give us some other context for what's been going on the last couple of years?
Well, I mean, like the I'm definitely going to go into the context like of what's been going on for the past few years. But oh, by the way, like if anyone wants to, you know, like if anyone doubts my credentials, I am Puerto Rican. If I'm going to say something in Spanish, like it's probably going to be like to, sorry, like what I should have said is that like anyone that knows, like will hear it from my accent, like when I say stuff in Spanish. But anyhow, so
I will defend your honor to the death if anybody tries to doubt your Puerto Ricanness.
This has already happened, like outside, like at least it's comical when it happens. But so what's been happening like these past few days? It's really interesting, like just because it shows like how like the amount of uncharted territory, like that's in play right now. There are two lawsuits in federal court right now. The first one is the bondholders. I can't remember exactly the bondholders from which one, because one of the other things about Puerto Rico is that because of the fact that there are so many like public utilities and public corporations and all that, it's not just one set of bondholders that want money from Puerto Rico. I mean, like there are so many different bondholders that I can't really like keep them straight. Like, and the thing is that they fight with each other because they all want to have like
really go into the basics of like what is actually happening in Puerto Rico. Like I know that there's a debt crisis and that whole thing, but let's say I have no idea what's going on right now in Puerto Rico.
You don't know what's going on, and also the people in play don't necessarily know like what's going on. In fact, one of the lawsuits that I was mentioning, it's to do like this grand discovery procedure, which all that it means is that they want to audit the debt. Now, Puerto Rico, like the entire debt of Puerto Rico is around $72 to $73 billion. That's a lot of money.
All right. So, Manuel, why don't you start off by explaining to us how Puerto Rico got into all the debt that it currently is in? Who is it in debt to? What responsibility does Puerto Rico have for its debt situation? What responsibility does the United States have for it? And kind of give us an idea of what the relationship between the United States and Puerto Rico is like.
Puerto Rico, it was basically war booty in the Spanish-American War of 1898. The U.S. went to war with Spain, and it was a very quick war. Like, it lasted about a month. So they, out of that, like three things happened. Puerto Rico became part of went to the U.S. as war booty. Cuba supposedly went free from Spanish control, but then, as we all know, like little by little, like the U.S. like got control over it. And the U.S. bought the Philippines for, I think at the time it was $5 million. Okay, so over the time, like a few laws like were passed to deal like, with Puerto Rico. Like for example, in 1900, the Foraker Act, or in Spanish it's known as Ley Orgánica de 1900. It basically set up the first type of civilian government that Puerto Rico was going to have under the U.S. And it was mostly appointed by Congress. Later on in 1917, like you had another law that was passed in Congress, like that set up a little bit of a looser system. Most of the people were appointed by Congress, like in government. Some of them were elected by the people. The big thing that happened in 1917 was that Puerto Ricans were given citizenship. You know, like, all right, like, and also that's around the time that World War One was going on, so a lot of Puerto Ricans like went to fight as well.
So was the U.S. citizenship granted to Puerto Rico specifically so they could have Puerto Ricans fighting in the army? Or was there another reason for that?
There's debate. Like, I mean, like, it happened at the right time, like, for people to just say that, like, oh, you know, it was because of the war. Now there's new scholarship like that I still have to read, like that is trying to come up with other reasons for that. But right now, like the most well-known reason is that, like, yeah, like it was probably like to get a few more people to go to World War One. But I mean, like that's even though like that's when Puerto Ricans like got U.S. citizenship, like that's not the most important thing that happened around that time. Like if you go like, you know, three years from then, in 1920, the Jones Act, the Merchant Marine Act of 1920, it basically set up like, you know, the U.S. Merchant Marine, like, and everything involved with that. But in relation to Puerto Rico, like what it did was that it made ship commerce from any foreign vessel illegal. Like what that means is, like, if you're trying to ship stuff into Puerto Rico, the only ship that can do it legally is a ship with a U.S. flag on it. And as far as we know, like there is no other merchant marine like that's more expensive to run than the U.S. merchant marine, which basically makes most of the stuff that's imported into Puerto Rico really expensive.
Was there any particular stated reason for this regulation, or was it just completely blatant? Like they didn't even care how it looked. Like they were just like, you can only American ships can come into Puerto Rico.
There really aren't like any stated reasons at the time, like for it. And I'm pretty sure that it must have been it must have been arbitrary, like in some sense, because let's say, for example, Hawaii falls under the cabotage laws, like the Merchant Marine Act of 1920. The U.S. Virgin Islands don't, which is really weird. I think Guam also falls under the cabotage laws. Like I'm not sure, like I would need to look that up, but yeah, like it's some territories of the U.S. fall under them, some don't. And if anything, like, right, I don't like the man. John McCain, like, is not definitely like far from my favorite politician, but
I should note for the audience that as we're recording, John McCain returned to the Senate so that he could put in his vote to take people's health care away. So fuck that guy. Continue. Sorry. Just wanted to put that context in there.
Yeah. You know, like at the same time like that, he just got like, you know, he just got life-saving surgery and also like got, cancer discovered in him. Like, so, you know, he's trying to get rid of the stuff that actually helped him anyhow. So, One okay thing that he has done in the past few days is that he put up legislation to get rid of the cabotage laws. I keep saying cabotage laws, but like it's basically like it's cabotage laws and the Merchant Marine Act of 1920 like are the same thing. Cabotage is just a technical term like for basically transportation of goods or people between two points in within the same territory.
So this has been law for the past, that's got to be like 90, almost 90,
97,
90,
97 years, because
that's
it was in 1920 that it was instituted. So, you know,
mind-boggling.
2017, like it's been 97 years. Yeah, no, but I guess like the one thing that I wanted to point out from that is that, you know, Puerto Rico's an island. Puerto Rico, you know, people would think it's like, oh, you know, like, you know, there's got to be agriculture there, like as well. It's not that much. For the amount of people like that Puerto Rico has right now, like the agriculture, the you know, like the native agriculture, like only it's only like about 15% like of what's needed like to feed the entire population. So about 85% like of what's consumed, like you know, like what's eaten in Puerto Rico, is imported.
What the hell was their economy based off of before tourism?
There was some sort of subsistence farming. Like there were a few big plantations. Like they did mostly coffee to export to Spain. But the biggest value that Puerto Rico like has had like is strategic. Puerto Rico is the first island that you can get to while you're coming into the Caribbean like from Europe. That was the main value that it had for Spain, strategic, and also like it had strategic value for the U.S. Like for the longest time, like the U.S. like wanted to have like some sort of control over the Caribbean, you know, to protect the Gulf of Mexico, like and pretty much like all the Port of New Orleans. In terms of subsistence, like and some sort of agriculture, it's been mostly coffee, or once the U.S. came, sugar. Like a lot of sugar, like Domino Sugar, like basically made a ton of money, like off of Puerto Rico. Like let's say, like up to about like the 1940s, like it was mostly agriculture. Like around 1940, like a part. This was part of like everything that was going on, like with Roosevelt, like and the Great Depression. Like you know, all the programs that he was instituting. Like one of the things that happened in Puerto Rico was that a lot of incentives were being given, like to basically develop manufacture. So between 1940 and 19 like about na between 1940 and 1970, like there was a lot of manufacture in Puerto Rico. That even more money like was put into Puerto Rico after Cuba went quote unquote communist like with Castro, because at that point, you know, like Puerto Rico and the US like had a rival, like you know, like Cuba like is here and it looks like they're thriving economically, so we got to make sure that, you know, our boy here Puerto Rico like is also thriving economically. Like so a lot of money, like a lot of incentives were put in like for manufacture. Around the 70s, like that kind of dropped off, but then in 1976 there was this section of the IRS code, the tax code. It was section 936. What it basically did was that if you set up any type of manufacturing like in Puerto Rico, like before that, like there were like actual cash like incentives like before going for manufacture to go into Puerto Rico. Now they had tax incentives. Basically, if you produced in Puerto Rico, you didn't have to pay federal taxes.
That's a
The
pretty
only like
sweet deal.
the only taxes that you had to pay like were, you know, like local taxes. And even then, like the you know, you could go in and make a deal like with a municipal government and you know, like everything would be fine. Like it produced a lot of economic activity, particularly pharmaceutical activity. There's a big corridor like in, so to give you a little bit of an idea, like I'm from Cataño. Cataño is about 30 minutes west of San Juan. So if you keep going west between that area like and if you go, you know, like if you go like pretty far west like from about like where San Juan is to the westernmost tip of Puerto Rico, there were a lot of pharmaceutical companies. In 1996, Congress voted to phase out Section 936 of the tax code.
So it was going to be that was the tax code that gave
that was a, that
a
was
sweet
a tax
deal.
Code like that. Oh yeah, it gave a great deal. Like, dude, like you're basically producing without having to pay any federal tax. Like,
yeah, so, that's mind blowing.
Anyhow, so it was a 10-year phase out. So in 2006. By then, like, you know, some of these companies like were like, oh, okay, you know, we're gonna have to start paying federal taxes, like, if we stay here, so we're going to slowly move everything out. 2006, there's an economic depression in Puerto Rico, to the point that I think the government had to the state level government. It's really weird, like, to, you know, to call the government of Puerto Rico a state level government, but that's in practice that's what it is. The state level government just closed. It closed for 2 weeks because they didn't have any money. Pretty much like the same thing like that happened a few years ago in Jersey. That actually happened again this time, like in Jersey.
Oh yeah, but, when they shut down the beaches.
Yeah, when they shut down the beaches, like, but not for good old Chris.
Yeah.
Chris Christie had the beach all to himself.
Oh, those were some good memes.
Oh, yeah. I think they're still coming out with them. Anyhow, from then on, there have been, like, a few things, like, that have been tried, like, to spur economic activity in Puerto Rico, but it's going very slow. Okay, so in 2006, a new private corporation is set up to deal like with the EWU. Like, it's basically, in English, it's known as a Puerto Rico Sales Tax Financing Corporation. In Spanish, it's Corporación del Fondo de Interés Apremiante. Like, the acronym that you're always going to hear is COFINA.
COFINA.
So COFINA is set up. And the way that it's set up is that, you know, they take in all of the money that that comes in from the sales tax. Part of that money goes to all the municipalities. Puerto Rico has 78 municipalities. Then the other part goes to the government. And the other part stays in COFINA proper, like, and they put it in a trust. From the money that goes into that trust, they use that as collateral, and they started using that as collateral, like, so that they could borrow money, and that's when the big boom, like, of borrowing started. Mostly because at that point, like, there's some. I can't remember how much it is at the moment. Like, there's a constitutional cap on how much money like Puerto Rico could borrow. So once they got to that cap, they set up a public corporation, and because this is a new entity, then the new entity could issue bonds out. Which, if I remember correctly, like, that's around like the same type of situation that Detroit found themselves in. Like, they couldn't borrow any more money. They set up a public corporation, and the public corporation started issuing bond debt. So Puerto Rico, because of the fact that Puerto Rico has not had that good credit, you know, for the longest time, they were at first paying 6% interest on the bonds, and then it kept going up. Just because, you know, like, the creditworthiness of Puerto Rico, like, kept being downgraded, like, all the way to now that it's I think right now, like, it's a step above junk status.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so we're still they're still pretty junky bonds, but now, like, at this point, like, you have the two main types of bonds that have been that had been issued, like, at the time, were the, you know, the general, what are called general obligation bonds, like, which are the bonds like that that the actual state government puts out, and the COFINA bonds, like, which were they were using as collateral the money coming in from the EWU, from the sales tax. But there were also, like, other bonds, like, being put out, like, for example, and these are the most ridiculous ones. So the public electric authority, like the public electric utility, put out bonds. Which is fine, like, because like whenever like a public utility puts out bonds, like it's usually for let's say like if you do some sort of if you need to like if you need to do a lot of construction, like, or just like renovating like all of your facilities or anything like that, like, so anything like that's a capital intensive, like for a short amount of time, you can put out bonds. But the big scandal was that at one point they were issuing bonds to cover payroll, which is insane, like, because like at that point, like, it's like you're not really doing it within, like, and I need to like say this out loud. We're talking, I'm talking about here as if I believe that the capitalist system like actually worked, like, when in reality,
Sure.
like, this was bound to, you know, this was bound to go south like really quickly. But yeah, like, our capitalist friends, like, you more often than not, like, you know, like all these people like that are in finance and whatever, like, if the it's commonly believed that if you're borrowing money to cover payroll, then you're in a very bad situation. But the biggest scandal is that, like, guess there's one entity that issued bonds that from the very beginning, like, you're thinking, okay, why would they issue bonds? The University of Puerto Rico public university system.
That seems odd.
So they issued bonds, and right now, like, one of the big things is that because they tried to declare bankruptcy, like, but there's been a lot going on, like, and then the strikes and whatnot, and they ended up not declaring bankruptcy. So they're still paying. They're still paying. You know, like, their debt. But they need to declare bankruptcy and try to restructure the debt fast, because there's if the cuts that have been proposed like actually go into effect, then it's gonna be the end of the public university system in Puerto Rico.
So we're up to, I guess, this now in the timeline. Are we up to present, or how much, what haven't we covered yet?
Well, the there's a lot of stuff like that I've left out. Like, this is a very rough draft, but at the very least, like, we're up to the present, like, when it comes to the University of Puerto Rico. Like, I should say a few more things about the University of Puerto Rico. So the situation is complicated because the actions of the current government lead everyone to believe that the particularly the governor, like, that he doesn't care about the University of Puerto Rico, that he's basically letting it die. The executive branch of government, like, basically, like, the governor, like, and in consultation, like, with a few people, are supposed to appoint members to the board. They hadn't done that, so the board was, I believe, five members short at the beginning of the year, which meant that they couldn't make some decisions, like, for example, impose an economic plan, impose a few other things like that. Would basically, like, it sounds weird, like, just because, like, there are so many things in play, like, but if the governing board had been, I guess, fully staffed, or, like, you know, like, it had like all of the members that it was supposed to have, they could have stopped the strike that was going on. They could have imposed
Can
a
you actually explain what the strike was and what was it all about?
yeah, let me see how do I go about this. So the current way that the University of Puerto Rico is funded is that they get a little over 9% of whatever budget, like, is passed for the year. Like, it's a basic formula. You don't go above it, and you don't go under it. Because the Financial Control Board is in place now, that formula went out the window. And out of everything that could have been cut in the budget. And this is another reason that people think that the current governor of Puerto Rico just doesn't care about the university, is that He basically said, okay, I'm going to, from everything that I could cut, I'm just going to cut from the university. I'm going to start by cutting 400, I'm going to start by cutting $400 million of the budget, like right now. And eventually, like, it's gonna go up to about, they're cutting about half the budget. Right now, because of the cuts, the university, there are two things that are happening right now, like, that might endanger, like, the university immediately. One is that it's probably not, it's in danger of not being accredited. They're supposed, like, because of the fact that they're, like, all the most of the funding, like, has been cut. The other thing that's being that endangers the university is that because of the instability, they're probably not going to get federal funds for next year, which me and most of the people that go to university in Puerto Rico use Pell Grants, so no Pell Grants.
So, what institutions in Puerto Rico are just ceasing to function at this point? Because it sounds like a lot of aspects of the government and some of the public services, it sounds like they're basically all collapsing, is what it sounds like to me.
The worst is yet to come. Like, it's we're nowhere near what could happen. Now, the state level government is actually in somewhat of an okay standing, like, just because, like, they've done they actually haven't cut themselves, like, that much, haven't cut their budgets that much. Like, okay, so before I go into the like all the cuts that have passed, I need to go, like, into the process of how the budget is done, like how the budget is passed. So because of the Financial Control Board now, the way that the budget, like, is approved, like, and then passed, is that the state legislature, like, draws up a budget, like, the what they're projecting, like, that they're going to do with a consultation of the Financial Control Board. Like, the Financial Control Board basically, like, tells them, oh, this is how much money, this is how much, like, you need to cut. You can decide where you're going to cut it from,
And can you
but you
actually
need.
explain what the Financial Control Board is?
Okay, so let's go back to 2000, to, well, 1 year ago, 2016. So in 2016, Congress passes the PROMESA Act, which basically, like, institutes the Financial Control Board. The Financial Control Board is seven people that have basically the power to veto everything that the government of Puerto Rico does. Like, if they haven't exercised complete, like, that complete power, like, but they do have, they have complete power over what any decision, like, that's taken in Puerto Rico, just because, like, they have the power to say, like, where you can't fund that, like, you need to cut that. And also, they are the only ones that can represent Puerto Rico in federal court. So one of the parts of PROMESA, like, is Title III. The Title III just basically means, like, these are the rules, like, for declaring bankruptcy. So pretty much, like, right now, like, any part of Puerto Rico except the municipalities can declare bankruptcy. Like, they can just say, like, they can go, like, and say, like, oh, under Title III, like, of PROMESA, I am declaring bankruptcy, and, like, I'm like, we'll see, like, which creditors I give money to now. The other thing that the Financial Control Board does is that when the whole budget process, like, is kind of complicated, like, just because, well, sorry, not, it's easy on paper, but it's complicated with what has happened so far, because the way that it was supposed to go is that the legislature drafts a budget, sends it to the Financial Control Board. The Financial Control Board either approves it and sends it back so that, like, it can be made into law, or sends it back saying, like, oh, you need to change this and this and this and this. What's happened so far is that the budget was drafted, it was sent to the Financial Control Board. the Financial Control Board did something really weird. They said, like, oh, you know, we're going to add to this ourselves, and basically say like, oh, you know, you're conditionally approved. Now, what did they add? This is the part like where the cuts come in. They said, like, okay, like you're projecting this, you're projecting like this amount of money, like, and some of it, like, you know, we already know that's coming in. Like the other part is projections on the sales tax that's coming in, and other taxes like that, that are supposed to come in. Some people like have said that those projections are way too optimistic. So what the Financial Control Board did was that they put down themselves on the budget, all right, if you don't get to these projections, then immediately you need to institute a furlough, state government employees work, and it's, you know, you're taking, like, they're going to work 20% less, but then also take home 20% less pay. So that's one thing that could happen. The other thing that could happen is so this is a really fun fact about Puerto Rico. Like, there's a Christmas bonus involved for government employees and for private employees too. Like, so what the other thing that the Financial Control Board said was that the Christmas bonus is going to be either reduced or outright taken away. Or both things could happen, like either like the entire Christmas bonus is eliminated and the furlough like goes into effect. It's tricky, like, because one of the things like that people have been debating like for the past few weeks is what can cause more damage to the economy in Puerto Rico, a furlough for all government employees or just firing 20% of government employees. And at this point, it's really iffy, because if you do institute a furlough for all government employees, a good portion of them are just going to quit and go and, you know, move somewhere, like somewhere within the continental U.S. That's actually a good segue, like, to go into, like, because a lot of people are just leaving Puerto Rico.
Yeah, what I thought was interesting, one of the articles that you sent me, where it was, I forget which town in Puerto Rico that has a ridiculously high unemployment rate, where they were talking about periodically younger Puerto Rican workers, you know, they go to United States for a while and they talk about how hard, you know, they had to get, you know, these jobs and they're low paying and they're hard, you know, whatever. But then they come back to Puerto Rico and then there's just no work at all for them to do.
Yeah, the town that you're thinking of is Lares. Lares has actually suffered a big like a huge drain on its population. But in fact, like, about if I'm reading this right, like, they've lost about a quarter of the population since 2000. But this is actually an island-wide problem. What's happened is that the population has gone down to 3.5 million right now. Like, we have less people now than we had in 2000. Like, about 500,000 people less than what we had in 2000.
That's in 17 years. That's massive.
Yep.
Puerto Rico's not a big country.
No, it's 111 miles by 36 miles. Like, it's a pretty small island.
By the way, I found the quote. I want to actually read it because it's such a powerful quote here.
Go ahead.
It says, "The people who have come back and tell everyone how hard it is in Orlando, that you can't survive there without three jobs," Mr. Cuevas said. "The difference is that over there, you can find the three jobs. Here, you find zero jobs." So I wanted to transition a little bit more to, so if we can talk about, as we already have, a little bit more about what life has become like for everyday Puerto Ricans and what has been the reaction. One of the things I thought was interesting is the question of statehood or independence. And I understand they have referendums every few years or so. And it seems like there's very low voter turnout for these referendums, and then nothing ever happens. So if you could talk a little bit about what do people feel like there are political options in Puerto Rico, and what kind of political actions are being taken, and what is the situation on the ground there?
The referendums and the plebiscites and all that, like, just because, like, they're honestly, like, they're a joke. It's a let's like they're like all around, like, there have been let me see, like, off the, like, I need to count them, like, because I sometimes forget, like, whether it's been five or six, like, but there was a plebiscite in 1967, and another one in 1993, and another one in 1998, another one in 2012, and then this past one. You know, the one in 1967, like, that was, you know, same massive turnout, like, as there is always in Puerto Rico. Like, usually for, like, any type of election, like, or referendum or plebiscite, like, anything that involves, like, going and casting your ballot, there's about an 80% voter turnout. Mostly because, you know, like, not only is it instilled in Puerto Ricans, oh, you know, like, you should go out to vote, but also because the day, you know, voting day is a public holiday, so you don't need to go to work. It's not like over here, like, when, like, oh, you know, like, voting day, like, you have to figure out, like, whether you can go in the morning or if you can go after work or stuff like that. Like, you don't need to think about that in Puerto Rico. What happened in 1998, pretty like, it was laughable. Like, what the party in power, which was the party, the pro-statehood party, they worded the political formulas, like, the just like the definitions, like, for the particular relationships to the United States. They worded it in such a way that the pro status quo party basically said, oh, you know, our party like believes that, like, you're manipulating this, so we're gonna vote none of the above. So over 50% of the people voted none of the above. So it basically broke the vote. Mm-hmm. In 2012, it was a little bit more straightforward. Like, their, like, statehood just lost. In this past election, what happened was that the party in power right now is the pro statehood party, and the other parties, like the pro status quo party and the independence party, they both said that they were boycotting. And a lot of other people, like, that were the pro statehood party, like, they had a primary, like, for the candidate for governor, and a lot of people, like, are still, like, you know, kind of touchy about that subject, like, so they, like, those people, like, that weren't big fans of the current governor, a lot of them, like, basically got they got convinced to stay home. Like, that's why you basically had a 23% turnout for that referendum.
That's ridiculously low.
That's super low. Like, that's and what was funny is that, like, there were other people, like, in, I think it was either in 2007 or 2008, like, there was a vote. They wanted to change the legislature to just one chamber. And that Puerto Ricans voted in favor of that, but because the voter turnout was low, the current governor, like, who was not the governor, like, at the time, like, who was not in favor of just one chamber, like, in the legislature, basically said, oh, you know, we're not doing this because the voter turnout was so low. So that same party that was in power back then was the pro statehood party. Like, so right now, like, they're trying to say, oh, you know, like, it doesn't matter that that the voting turnout, like, was so low. 97% of the people still voted for statehood. Like, this is a momentous occasion. We're taking these results to Washington, like, and we're gonna become a state. The problem, like, there were problems from the start with that, because so last year, like, the, like, there were, like, a law passed that basically that allocated the funds, allocated federal funds to give Puerto Rico, like, for, like, this, like, the whole plebiscite. On condition that the the political formulas, like to define the relationship between Puerto Rico and the U.S., were vetted by the Department of Justice. It was really funny, like, to see Jeff Sessions, like, become the attorney general, like, because then, like, everyone knew, he's either not going to care about Puerto Rico, or he's probably going to be against, letting a bunch of foreigners, get into the U.S. So they at that point, like, there wasn't much that the Puerto Rican government could do. Like, they sent the paperwork into the Justice Department. The Justice Department didn't say anything for the longest time. What they sent in was basically, this vote is only going to be about either statehood or independence. The status quo is not going to be included here. Jeff Sessions actually sent it back and said, "Oh no, you got to do this over, and you have to include the formula for the current situation, but also what you're saying about the pro-statehood party had been saying that the only way to assure be sure that Puerto Ricans, like, were going to keep U.S. citizen was by voting for statehood." And the letter that they got back from Jeff Sessions was, "What you're saying is not true because of this and this law." Like, he was referring to a law that was passed in 1940, like, which it there's it, this is a whole this is a this would be a whole other tangent, like, about whether Puerto Ricans, like, could be stripped of their U.S. citizenship. Like, it's what's called, sometimes, like, Puerto Ricans are called non-14th Amendment citizens. Just because we weren't originally, we weren't citizens, like, under the 14th Amendment. And by the way, like, for those that don't know, like, the 14th Amendment, like, it was the amendment that basically said anyone that's born within the territory of the U.S., like, is a U.S. citizen.
The 14th Amendment is why I'm a U.S. citizen.
Exactly. It's why I'm a U.S. citizen. Like, even though, like, I, like, well,
We have
it
slightly
depends. Like,
different situations. My mom just got into the U.S. just in time to pop me out from a
damn.
non-U.S. territory.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, we're in retrospect, it's kind of amazing that they let my mom into the country. But I think, yeah, they were not necessarily aware that they were getting a 2-for-1 deal.
Oh man. Wow, like, I lost my train of thought there for a second.
No, that's cool. I actually wanted to shift gears a little bit, if that's cool with you.
Go ahead.
So I'll start off by telling a quick anecdote. I want to say this was like about a year and a half ago. I saw some puppet theater about Oscar Lopez Rivera.
Oh, Jesus.
I know, right? Yeah, this is a great start. Yeah, it was like a 2-hour-long puppet theatrical piece about Oscar Lopez Rivera. This was before he was released from prison, which just happened earlier this year. And Oscar Lopez Rivera, for the audience that doesn't know, was a Puerto Rican anti-colonial pro-independence revolutionary who was in American incarcerated by the United States for several decades. So anyway, I saw this puppet theater, and I mean the puppetry was fantastic. They did some really great movement stuff, some cool masks. I don't know shit about what the hell it was about. Having seen this 2-hour-long play about Oscar Lopez Rivera, I don't know a damn thing about him. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about not just Oscar Lopez Rivera, but the movements, some of the more radical movements in trying to achieve Puerto Rican independence. If you could talk about those a little bit and how they, are they still relevant today? Is this some more of a historical thing, or just kind of go into that a bit?
I mean, honestly, like, it, I mean, I'll tell you this much, like, this, I didn't prepare as much as I should have to answer that particular question, like, but I
And I should
can
have
tell
asked
you
you ahead
that,
of time to I should have told you I was going to ask
yeah, just
that.
because that's the thing, like, it's we could have done an entire podcast like on just that, because of the fact that there was a lot going on, like, for the longest time between the 1930s, like, and the 1970s, like, there was a lot going on in Puerto Rico, particularly, like, and you know that the reason that Oscar Lopez Rivera, like, got sent to jail, like, was because, well, I mean, they never proved, like, that he actually did anything. Like, what they got him on was charges of planning something, basically planning a bombing, like, and that's why he
Yeah.
spent, like, I think it was 30, I lost count, like 33, 34 years in jail.
It was something like
But
that. It was, I think he was, yeah, it was in the 70s or, yeah, around the 70s when he was put into jail, if I remember.
yeah,
So it was a really
but
long time.
yeah, but I mean, like, it's like just going into the subject a little bit, like, I mean, you had the what was it, like, the you had the Nash the Nationalist Party, like, in Puerto Rico, which basically after the mid-50s was no more, just because they got harassed by the FBI so much. In fact, like, there's an anecdote that I have, like, with like, my dude, like, just to let everyone know, my grandma, like, was basically, like, the family historian, like, just because, like, she, like, it, her, like, and her family, like, lived through a bunch of shit back home. So she was telling me that back in if I this was a little bit after my dad was born, like, and he was born in 1952, like, so let's say, like, like, late 1952, like, early 1953, like, she was hospitalized for a few days, and she was in like, this hospital called, like, the Ashford Presbyterian Hospital, like, in Condado, like, in one of the like, bigger, like, more expensive places to live in Puerto Rico now. Like, it was okay back then, but anyhow, she heard screams, like, from the, like, from the end of the aisle. Like, she was like, "What the hell is going on?" Like, and she was asking people, like, and they didn't really know, like, what was going on. And she heard like the person screaming, like, something about, "Oh, like, they're coming into me, like, it's like, like, ghosts, like, and whatever, like, like, they're burning me, like, they want to kill me." Who was the person that she heard? The person that she heard, like, at least, like, this is what she told me, like, and it makes sense, like, after I looked into the history of it, was Pedro Albizu Campos. Like, by the way, Pedro Albizu Campos, like, was the leader of the Nationalist Party, like, in Puerto Rico in the 30s and 40s. He got sent to jail, and while in jail, he was submitted to radiation. Now, like, I need to read up on all the little details of it, like, but it was basically like a form of torture. Like, they were torturing him. Like, at one point, the governor back then, Luis Muñoz Marín, he appeared on some TV show, like some variety, like, talk show, like, in the 50s, like, and was talking about Pedro Albizu Campos, and basically saying, it's like, "Oh, you guys don't need to worry about, like, what's going on in Puerto Rico. Like, the leader of the Nationalist Party is this, like, really weird dude, like, that apparently, like, always needs to have, like, towels around himself." Like, there were pictures of Pedro Albizu Campos, like, with just, like, with wet towels on him, because of the fact that he had been irradiated so much that he needed, like, he always felt like he was burning.
What did they use to expose him to it?
I actually do not remember, like, what the radioactive isotope was, like,
You
but
United States is really into fucking using the most ghoulish, like, scientific chemical radiation means certainly Latin people. I mean, so like you got like the Tuskegee experiment infecting black people in the United States with syphilis. They also infected Guatemalans with syphilis at one point. United States used Zyklon B, which is one of the chemicals that was used in the gas chambers by the Nazis. They sprayed a bunch of Mexicans with that in the during like the 1910s or so. This radiation thing, I have not heard of that. That is ghoulish.
That I don't remember the extent of that, like, but I know that at the very least, like, there's that's well documented. In fact, Nelson Denis documented it on his book "War Against All Puerto Ricans." The other, also like just to mention, like the other way, like in which the U.S. has experimented, like with people in Puerto Rico, was that I forgot around what time it was, but a lot of people in Puerto Rico got sterilized, without knowing. This was back at the latest, it had to have been like in the 50s, like, because I don't think that could have happened like without without a massive outcry.
I mean, I know in the United States itself, there were still sterilizations happening as late as the 1970s. So, like, who knows?
Dude, like they're happening right now. Like, I forgot there was a prison somewhere like that in exchange for lowering people's sentences by, I believe it was 30 days. Like they were offering sterilization.
Oh God, that's horrifying.
They basically said, okay, like if you let us sterilize you, then we'll knock out 30 days from your sentence, and that was it. Like, and people took it.
Man, that's ridiculous. We haven't even been able to touch on some of the other things that have been going on in Puerto Rico. There was I'll just quickly mention for the audience. There was for a number of years a U.S. Air Force base in Vieques. Vieques, is that correct?
We got to backtrack, like, because there were a few things going on. Like, there were 11 military installations in Puerto Rico.
11.
There's still some National Guard stuff like that's active. Like, for example, Muñiz Air Base in Carolina, like, is still active. What was going on in Vieques, that was the Navy. There was actually a naval range in Vieques.
Right.
So they were using a bunch of different munitions. Some of them possibly radioactive, like, which is the reason that the people that went into the Navy base, like, to conduct civil disobedience, because, like, the thing that triggered everything was that a fisherman got killed. Like, this was in 1998. Like, a fisherman got killed while there was a range exercise going on. Like, so I don't remember the details of it. Like, but, you know, like, I forgot. Like, there was something else that wasn't said before. I was 5 years active duty in the Army. Like, so I've seen, like, what ranges look like. Like, it's not pretty. Like, So anyhow, like, so the a fisherman died, and after that, like, there was such a public outcry like that. Like, that's when you get people, like, just sneaking into the base, like, sneaking is specifically into the range so that the range exercises couldn't happen.
Oh my God, eventually, that's terrifying.
It was insane. Like, it's like, it, at any, and the thing is, like, at any moment, like, you could either be arrested, like, or, you know, like, you weren't sure, like, what could happen out there.
Yeah.
But if you wanna see something funny online, I think you can still find videos of the governor of Puerto Rico at the time, Pedro Rosselló, went to Congress, and I forgot the name of the committee that he was speaking at, but James Einhoff was there. And at one point, like, he said, He said something like really, really like motivated America. Like, and I just remember rolling my eyes like when he said it. What he said was that he was asking the governor of Puerto Rico at the time, like, so I'm from Oklahoma. Like, he's a senator from Oklahoma. Like, and there's actually a really big range over there, like in Fort Sill. He said that he had talked about he had talked to people that lived around Fort Sill, like, and they said, like, it's like, and some people had told him, you know what I hear, like, when I hear the range exercises, like when I hear the artillery, like, going, like being used, I hear freedom.
Oh my God.
Dude, he actually said that. You need to look that video up on YouTube.
Yeah,
And
I think
one
I'm
of
gonna have
the
to do that.
The thing is, like, that part, like, like the people that speak English, like, we'll see that part and we'll be like, wait, what? Like, what the hell? The part that was really interesting and actually, like, what is the reason that this dude, like, is still looked at, like, in a good light, even though, like, he was corrupt as hell, was that as soon as Imhoff said that, he basically said, like, Mr. Senator, like, don't push it, don't push it. And people were like, oh my God, like a Puerto Rican with a backbone, like
That's
against
like
the
a common
empire and
thing with
shit.
I've noticed with Latin American politicians is that they can be real shitty and real unpopular, but all you need to do is find some American, some Yankee imperialist talking some bullshit, call them out on it, and then everybody loves you. Like fucking Vicente Fox, he sucked. He was a terrible piece of shit, but ever since he's been like dropping the F-bomb to Donald Trump, people are acting like he's the freaking Pope of Mexico or something like that.
Oh yeah, no, it's quite comical, man. Like his popularity has risen like nothing. Like it's nuts.
Word. So we are actually we are way over an hour at this point of recording. So I wanted to, yeah, do you have any like last things you wanted to say before we wrap up?
There's a lawsuit going on right now, like in federal court. Not against Puerto Rico, but against the federal government and having to do with Puerto Rico. Like, and this is a lawsuit coming from bondholders. Now, like, what's going on? They what their argument is, ultimately, it's not if Puerto Rico can't pay, it's that the federal government has to respond for that. The way that they're arguing about that is that like it's twofold. Like one thing that they're saying is that the Financial Control Board is like they're alleging that the Financial Control Board is basically like a federal entity. They in PROMESA, like the law, like that basically made the shit show that we have now, like with the Financial Control Board and the Title III bankruptcy proceedings, they literally like put down on it that the Financial Control Board is not a federal entity, but an entity like that at the state level, like a Puerto Rico, supposedly a Puerto Rican entity, like that has like maybe half of them are Puerto Rican. That responds to the government of Puerto Rico, like and whatnot. But what they're saying with that is, take a look at how it works. The people in it were appointed they were appointed by Obama at the time. They were appointed by the President of the United States in consultation with Congress. They respond to Congress. The main argument of all of this is the power that the Puerto Rican government has does not come from its people. It comes from Congress. So there's like what they're saying is if they're part like if you know like it's basically like the same it's somewhat analogous to like let's say like you take out let's say you took out a student loan. And you put down your parents as cosigners. What they're saying is like, oh, Puerto Rico took out loans, and because of the fact that, you know, the political power that they have is because of an act of Congress. Congress is a co-signer, like, of that debt, which means that, you know, the federal government as a whole, like, what they're arguing, like, is that the federal government as a whole is responsible for that debt. So we'll see how that goes. They're like, what the commentary in Puerto Rico is that, strictly speaking, like, in just in legal terms, that is true. But there's gonna be some, like, really weird shit, like, going on, like, because we all know that, in fact, that the U.S. is not gonna pay that money.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
they're never going to pay that money. Like, they're going to figure out something, like, and they're going to say no, it's not happening. No, whatever.
Word. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show and giving us some insight into what's going on in Puerto Rico.
No problem, man. Anytime.
The Movements is a leftist history and politics podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Support the show at paypal.me/movementspodcast. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Movements Pod. Viva la revolución. Si el pobre pide justicia.